Hey, you little creeps and freaks.
Creepies and freakies!
Just trying to go with higher energy, and it did not happen.
It was like,
yep. Like, hey!
Never mind!
That's fine. Welcome back to the In the Nick of Crime podcast.
Heyo.
Listen.
Linda.
We're 2 weeks in a row, but listen, Linda. I'm not. Scoops and Lore 22. I was having a rough week. And Courtney's gone. It just didn't happen. So, sorry.
Yeah, I was on vacation, so...
Yeah.
I was having a great time in 80-degree weather while you had an absolute blizzard of a snowstorm.
Yeah.
Sorry.
And a shit storm of life.
Yeah, so, that too.
Here we are.
Ew.
Anyway. We're usually... Well, we're trying to be a weekly true crime podcast again.
Woo! Yeah.
We're, so far, 2 for 2.
2 for 2!
We're not going to talk about Scoops and Lore. That's bi-weekly anyway, so technically, I'm winning still, because if I get it released Thursday, then we'll be on track.
We'll be fabulous.
Yep, and it will happen. Okay, I know you guys miss Scoops and Lore. We do too. I just don't. Yeah. Anyway, but we like to do some spooky shit. That's what Scoops and Lore is, if you are new here. Our offset, offshoot, that people really like. I don't think we have anything else to talk about off the jump. We are probably going to be nixing Patreon. We just feel bad because we can't, like, we appreciate everyone's support, any of our patrons. We love you guys so much and appreciate you so much, but we don't want to continue doing the Patreon if we really can't deliver more content for you, because really that's the whole point of it.
Right.
So we may shift to something like Buy Me a Coffee or something like that, but we may just... leave it. Really, the only reason we were doing it is just to help fund new equipment as we need it.
Yep.
And we've, you know, donated proceeds to things in the past, things like that. So, yeah, we're probably just going to go ahead and nix it. So, just wanted to give our patrons a heads up on that. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Everyone that has supported us in that manner. We just want to make sure we're doing right by you guys.
What she said.
Yeah. Anyway.
Anyway. I have a really gnarly case.
Excuse me.
So we might want to, like, just let you run into whatever this wild fuckery is you're about to bring out.
I thought you were
out.
Just going
to
go straight into your case.
No.
I was like, what are you doing?
I was trying to give you a heads up.
So I kind of cheated. I was looking up weekly fuckery, and then Courtney gave me the fuckery to update on. But it's relevant.
Yes.
So anyone that hasn't listened all the way in the Wayback Machine are...
Very first episode.
Our flagship episode was a roller coaster. However, we covered a very important story, the case of Lacey Fletcher. So anyone that hasn't listened to that or is unfamiliar, just to kind of give you a brief overview, Lacey was a woman who was diagnosed as autistic, I think pretty late in life. Her parents are absolute pieces of shit and pretty much just didn't do anything to try to take care of her. I believe, from what it sounds like, her autism just became so severe that she just could not care for herself. So, more or less, her horrendous, absolute goblin parents, I don't know what other word to use.
Goblin.
They're fucking horrendous. Goblin is too nice for what they are, but that was the first thing that came to my brain. But her horrible parents literally just left her lying on a couch pretty much for 12 years.
Like, literally in her own feces, her own urine, like, didn't shower.
Right.
Like, in sores.
Yeah. And poor Lacey passed away under these conditions. If I remember, it was pretty much just from lack of nutrients, starvation, malnourishment, all of that. And it was so horrendous. I don't want to get too graphic with it, but she more or less melted into the couch that she was in because of... waste that was sitting on her body for this time.
Yep.
Like, maggots were even involved when she was alive still. So, absolutely horrendous. Her parents, so this happened in, gosh, when was it? Hold on, let me see.
Thought it was 2022.
I think so as well. It was either December 21 or January 22. Okay, so yeah, she was found. So Lacey was 36 at the time that she was... that she had passed away, and this was in East Feliciana, Louisiana. So in January 2022, she was found in this state, and it said that her dad pretty much just, like, had no reaction. And her mother, when police arrived, was, like, sitting with her head between her knees. And the detective that came said she, quote-unquote, shed a tear or two. And that's it. So, absolutely deplorable. Mm-hmm. They were arrested quite quickly. And then I know in this past May of 2023, so this was a long time, they were talking about a preliminary hearing or something, but now the newest update is that they have been released on bond. Love that. So love that shit.
I'm literally just rolling my eyes because I have nothing to say.
Yeah. So at this point, nothing else is going to happen with this case until they have their next hearing in May.
So again, May.
Right. So
2 years after this.
Yeah. Like about more than 2.5 years since she passed away. And they're still just fucking dicking around with this.
And they're living their best life.
Mm-hmm. And they just literally have the most punchable faces. Like, really I would do. Just love to sock both of them right in their fucking crap lousy faces. So.
I love your word usage.
I just feel for her so much. And even, like, it does seem like her autism really kind of came out of left field. Her neighbors had said she was just a happy, normal kid, and then
from what I read, it was about the age of like 18, 19.
Yeah, she that was it like really early
started
adulthood.
To start showing. Mm-hmm. Like she'd always been a little like antisocial and like
right.
Like not catching social cues, but not to the extreme of like showing that she had autism right. until she was like 18, 19.
Right,
and then it went pretty quickly after.
Yeah,
that.
Yeah, and if she wasn't being treated properly, then she doesn't know how to manage symptoms, and then the people that are supposed to be taking care of her did absolutely fucking nothing.
When there's so many opportunities for parents of who right. have children with autism.
Right. There are so many resources. Many resources. So, yeah, unfortunately not a great update, but it is making progress at least. So now we just have to
wait till May.
Yeah. Send out all of the vibes that they get found guilty and they are sentenced for murder. Uh-huh. I have a feeling, if I were a betting woman, I'm not, but if I were, I have a feeling they will get convicted of negligent homicide.
Probably. Yeah. Which, I mean, still, I think, at least they're convicted by it. Right. But unfortunately, they deserve
and
more.
Hopefully they get something along the lines of, because I know it's like neglect of a minor. I feel like it'd be something akin to it because she was a dependent.
Right.
But yeah, I feel like that's probably the steepest they're going to get.
Which is like, what, 20 years usually?
I don't know. It depends. I feel like I've heard the whole fucking gamut run with it. So.
Lame.
Yeah. She just needs justice. Finally. Yeah. Like, I'm just, this is one of those cases where I'm just so glad that she's not in that environment anymore.
Oh, absolutely.
Of course, that's not what you want to happen, but my gosh, like, her to continue living like that, it's not a life.
No.
At all.
Nobody deserves that. Nobody.
No. Not at all. And they just treated her like she was nothing. Absolutely nothing. Yeah. Like, she was a burden, and they couldn't be bothered to take care of her.
The thing that I keep saying is, like, they could have signed rights over to the state, and the state could have helped her.
Get social services involved and say, you know, we don't feel like we can take care of her in the manner
and
that she needs.
And they will get involved, and they will help her.
Right. And even ending up a ward of the state would have been far better than what she was handed.
100%.
By her fucking parents.
Oh, they're despicable.
Yeah. They are absolutely disgusting people. I hope you have the fucking day you deserve. I hope you stub your toe every day for the rest of your lives. I'm pretty sure I probably said something similar when we first covered this case. But I hope they just have, like, the most fucking, just, I don't know what I'm trying to say, but just, like, the inconvenient day.
You're so flustered right now.
Yeah, I just hope they have the most inconvenient day every day for the rest of their lives. They're just in a constant state of frustration.
Mm-hmm.
Because shit just isn't going their way. Like, oh, I'm sorry. You fucking suck.
Well, and people are going to recognize them, too, which is they're going to get hackled, which I'm fine with.
Yeah. Well, and their fucking faces are terrible, so. The mom looks like a witch, and the dad looks like a little hobbit man. Can't stand these fuckers.
I love it.
Yeah. I just, like, I want to fight them on Lacey's behalf. I wish I could.
I feel you.
Yeah. So that's the fuckery. It really is fuckery right now.
Literally. To a T.
That case clearly gets me
sorry
revved up, and it makes me furious, but
yeah, Michelle just, doesn't know what, like, what words to
yeah, bring out like, her I can't even right articulate now. My just disgust for these people. Because it's just horrendous. It's like, it's one thing to not take care of a dependent, but to take care of a dependent that literally cannot take care of themselves. You are yeah. their only option. Unless you would be a decent fucking human and admit that you are not providing them the life that they need. And let them get help to yep. provide that life to them.
Yes.
So, fuck you both. You suck.
On to the next one.
Anyway, Courtney, okay. what Yay. Do you have for us today that's going to piss me off more?
Yeah. So, okay, I have to do a little pretext in this. The case that I was originally going to do was mind-blowing until I started doing the research and found out that it was an AI-generated story.
Oh, fuck you. I was going to say, because I thought you had this done already, because you told me
something. I did. I had a bunch of stuff done, and then when I started doing some more research on it.
Save it for Scoops and Lore.
I will.
Yeah.
I will. Don't worry.
Yeah.
So I was really bummed about that.
See? Be careful, kids, because AI, she's a sneaky Dude, bitch these that days.
That AI stuff that's coming out is yeah. wild.
Yeah. It's just chat IQ.
It's wild.
And the way it can write things.
Dude, it blew my mind. I was like, IQ who fan. The fuck gave the AI the ability to do this? Because this case is messed up.
Like thousands of human brains, thousands of the most brilliant human brains creating a computer program.
Too much, too much, too much, too much. But I was looking for cases that were just not very well known, and yeah. this is a case that I have never heard of. There are no actual documentaries. Like I said, I found the YouTube, channel that had yeah. it that's from a podcast, and I had a few other podcasts that I'd listened to on it.
Right.
Very few have covered this case.
All right.
And I feel like it needs to be covered because I feel like justice... I think was served. I'm going to say I think it was.
Right.
But we have a survivor in this case, but we also have a murder in this case.
Yeah.
Which is a bummer.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm going to start in Mount Vernon, New Hampshire.
Okay.
If you guys don't know, it's a very rural.
Rural New England.
Yeah. picturesque, like, type of town.
Piscaresque.
If you don't know, it's actually named after George Washington's hometown.
Oh, okay.
I did not know that. And the population is less than 3,000 people. So wow. take that into consideration of what I'm about to talk about.
And, like, that's literally probably the only reason we even know what that town is, because I'm like, I definitely know what that town is, but that's tiny.
Yeah, 3,000 wow. people, very tiny community, yeah. like, you know, just a normal, quiet town. And this case is about Kimberly Cates. I'm going to say that right. And all the information that I'm about to tell you about Kimberly
mm-hmm.
is from her Memorial Scholarship Fund website. Aww. I actually pulled it straight from her bio because I yeah. could not find information on her.
I've had that a lot because I know we try to cover cases that aren't as widely known, and I've had to do the same thing. I try to find information, like, if I didn't find it on the TV show, I'd find it on their, like, obituary, mm-hmm. if there was a memorial, anything like that.
Yeah, and I have to talk about these horrific humans a lot in this case, so I really wanted to try to put as much information as yeah. I could about Kimberly into yeah. this.
Well, we want to get to know them too, yeah. you know?
So I'm going to start. She goes by Kim. A lot mm-hmm. of people call Kim. She was born in Toledo, Ohio.
Okay.
March 6, 1967. She grew up in Arizona.
Okay.
She attended nursing school at Pima Community College in Tuscan. Duke.
I laugh because Tucson, like, I know how to spell it, but that, the spelling of that city makes me so mad. It is one of the things.
It's so annoying.
Yeah, it is one of the things that just nags at my brain. And I always, whenever I type it, because work, whenever I type it, I always say Tucson in my brain, because I'm like, I know how to spell it, but Tucson. That's the only way I can make it make sense.
Yeah, it would make more sense as T-U-S-O-N, not T-U-C-S-O-N.
Or even, like, T-U-S-C-O-N.
Yeah.
Instead of T-U-C-S-O-N.
Stupid. Jinx. But she worked at Tucson Medical Center, where she met her really good friend and fellow nurse, Renee McAloney. I can never say that name all as one.
McAloney, maybe?
It may be McAloney. I looked it up, and there was two ways that people pronounced it. So
probably the Irish way. And then
probably,
the
yeah. So Renee, who watched Kim basically fall in love with nursing, she found her true calling working with children in the Aww. Pediatric unit at the medical center, and she was also the person who helped Kim discover the love of her life, which is David K. Cates.
Aww.
And I don't have this in here, but David Cates and her actually met, were together for 3 months and got married. Like, that's how fast these two, like, knew that they were soulmates.
They knew.
They knew it.
You know, you know.
So, for Cam, family came first.
Yeah.
Jamie, she has a daughter named Jamie. And Dave, as he goes by, were the center of her universe. Mm-hmm. She was an incredible parent. She was adored. Her brothers and their families and the member of Dave's family were each a gift to Kim. Mm-hmm. Like, she, you could tell, like, they were her world, whether they were biologically hers or not.
Yeah.
She never missed a birthday. She never missed an anniversary. She never missed a chance to celebrate holidays with any of them. Mm-hmm. Like, if that doesn't tell you how amazing this woman is, I don't know
what Right. does. Like, they, family was everything to her, clearly. Yeah.
So, Jamie and Kim actually had a really amazing relationship. She gave Jamie the opportunity to grow up as a woman, mm-hmm. but also allowed her to be able to play like a child.
Yeah.
Which I thought was kind of cool, because mm-hmm. sometimes parents don't know, like, the line between that.
Yeah, yeah.
She loved the simplicity of children and found intense joy in exploring the world through their eyes. She rejoiced in both the innocence and the inquisitiveness. Thank you. of her amazing daughter, and saw herself as Jamie's ally. And as Jamie navigated through a lot of challenges in life and through childhood, she made mm-hmm. sure she was there for her.
And I'm sorry, I know you already said this, but I didn't track. Shocker. Jamie was her daughter, her stepdaughter?
Her daughter.
Okay, got it.
Her and David's daughter.
Okay, got it.
Kim and Jamie were super close as a mother and daughter. Mm-hmm. They shared a common love language, which I thought was really cute that mm-hmm. they used that. But they also had an interesting other language where they could talk to each other without saying words. Like, they literally just...
They talked
through hugs, winks, or smiles.
Aww.
Which I thought was absolutely adorable.
Just warming my cold black heart.
I know. Kim could always remind Jamie how proud she was of her and how much she loved her.
I love that.
I know.
That's like, if any parent can just give their child that alone, it's so much.
Oh, it's huge.
It's like just knowing that you're making your parents proud, that's everything to a kid.
Oh, absolutely. Cases. Absolutely.
Yeah. I love that.
So, as a nurse, Kim was extremely sharp. She was efficient. She was professional. She was intensely dedicated to her patients. And when they came under her care, she justified for them everything she possibly could.
Love that.
It wasn't enough for her to just treat them for their physical ailments and what they were experiencing. She also worked to help calm their fears, their anxieties, and answer their questions about what was going to happen next. And to assure them that they were in a safe place. Mm-hmm. Which, I don't know about you, but... I mean, pediatric nurses usually are really good at this, but not always are older nurses.
Right. Like, usually the older nurses are like, get your shit together, you little fucker.
I just had my procedure in two.
From experience.
Right, that's what I'm just saying. I just had my procedure, and one of them was really nice, and the other one was like, she was a whiny baby. And I was like, audacity. Anyway. So, in the pediatric unit, she treated children and cared for them as they were her own,
aww.
Which I thought was precious. She knew how to make them smile. She knew how to make them laugh. She would calm them down. She mm-hmm. would do everything she could possibly do.
See, that's so important for pediatric care.
Because
that's so scary for a child. And to have a nurse or a doctor that just doesn't seem to care mm-hmm. that you're frightened, that's so important.
It's huge.
Gosh, what an angel of a nurse.
Her compassion didn't stop with her patients, though.
Mm-hmm.
She also reached out to their parents.
Aww.
Because as a mother, she understood how helpless and frightening it was.
Yeah.
She also saw that a lot of fathers struggled with the pain of their children. Mm-hmm. She worked with the parents to help them understand everything that their child was going through. That's which, amazing. Again, does not happen very often.
No. That's so amazing.
Although it wasn't always well received by the doctors, mm-hmm. she also fought hard to advocate for her patients to ensure that they were getting the best possible treatment available.
Good. Yep. Doctors can fuck off.
She spoke her mind in a positive, wonderful way, but wouldn't hold back if she had something to say. For Kim, speaking out on behalf of her patients was just part of her job as important as administrating medication or checking vital signs.
I love that.
Is precious.
Yeah, because that's just part of the job, and that's how it should be in general.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I know it is such a hard job, especially with nurses, but
oh yeah,
man, it makes the job so much more fulfilling. I don't know how you couldn't.
I agree. Yeah. So that's a little bit about her. A little bit so you can see and her that's background.
Great about her.
I know. I was so excited when I found that bio.
Incredible human. Yeah.
Yeah. So, 2004. Kim, David, and Jamie all moved to a large ranch-style home 2 miles outside of Mount Vernon. Mm-hmm. So it's like a really rural area. It's located on a dirt road, very secluded.
It's in the boonies.
Yeah, tons of woodlands, and there's only 4 houses on their street.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They loved their new home, but David's job as an engineer, he actually worked for the government.
Oh, okay.
Caused him to have to travel up to 26 times a year, which is a lot.
And her being out in the woods with her daughter by themselves.
And that's what we're going to get into here. So because of the seclusion at first, because they moved from Chicago. They were living in, or not, Baltimore, sorry. Not Chicago.
Even then.
Right.
That's a huge change.
Yeah. So moving from Baltimore to this tiny little town, of course, she's going to be super high on, like, security because coming from Baltimore, coming from any big city, like, it's terrifying.
You got to watch your back.
Absolutely. So she had a lot of anxiety, and they ended up installing an alarm system with motion detectors. And along with that, she also made a pact with their neighbors that they would keep an eye on each other's house. Nice. Which I thought was great.
That's awesome.
But by 2009, a lot of her fears had dissipated at this point. Mm-hmm. She's been there for a few years. They haven't had any issues. Right. I also found out later on that their security system had a short in it and they couldn't ever get it fixed. Mm. So they really stopped using it after about 3 years.
Yeah, because nothing had happened.
Well, granted, they're in a town of under 3,000 people. Everybody leave their door open. Right.
Everyone probably knew each other.
Yeah, it wasn't a thing. The last murder that happened in this town was almost 2 decades.
Holy moly.
Before this.
Yeah.
So, on Saturday, October 3rd, 2009, David left for his business trip to Maryland, leaving Kim and Jamie alone at home. Mm-hmm. Jamie and Kim, like I said, very close, often spent Saturdays together, and they slept in the same bed in Kim's bed while David was gone. Aww. Which I thought was precious, because she's 11. Like, at 11, you're usually like, Mom, I hate you, get away from me. Right. Like,
it's just, it's to keep each other company, to keep an eye on each other. I love that.
Exactly. So later that night, David messaged Kim saying that, have a good night, like, hope everything's well. She told him that they were planning to go to the mall the next morning, and that was the end of their conversation. This is where things get wild. Mm. So at 4:15 a.m. October 4th, so literally just a few hours later, 2009, Sergeant Kevin Furlong received a mutual aid request from the Milford County Dispatch regarding a suspected home invasion. Ugh. The dispatcher was unable to get much information or detail from the caller because they were quietly whimpering on the phone.
Oh my gosh.
Assuming that he was going to go for a home burglary because he didn't really know, like, what the situation was.
Yeah.
He did call for backup. Yeah, he did call for backup, but went ahead and went to the house.
Right, right.
As he was waiting for backup, he moved toward the house and he started looking through the windows just to see what was going on.
Yeah.
And he happened to see movement in the kitchen.
Okay.
He saw a female child lift her head up from behind the kitchen counter, and she was drenched in blood.
Oh my gosh.
He said that she was not only drenched in blood on her head, but then when he got in there, he found she was literally covered from head to toe.
Oh my gosh.
And he said he saw major trauma, major lacerations on her face and her extremities, but he didn't really know the full details of what was going on.
Right.
And he said what the most unsettling part of was, and trigger warning, she was missing a part of her foot.
Oh my gosh.
Yes.
When it's like, if she had gotten hit, because head wounds, they bleed so much.
They do.
So she could have gotten, you know, hit on her head, some cuts mid, and then, you know, her foot, and that could have accounted for all of that.
Oh, and
not
I'm
to
gonna,
say any of that is nothing, but.
No, and I'm actually going to get into this a little, really quickly. So he noticed that she was trying to scream, but she couldn't physically scream. And then he told her, like, it's okay, I'm a police officer. And he said the second he told her that he was a police officer, she whispered, I think my mommy's dead.
Oh, honey.
I know, broke my heart.
Oh my gosh.
So Furlong then stood up, because he can't really do a whole lot. He doesn't want to minister anything to her because he doesn't know what the extent of her issues are.
Right.
He stands up, obviously trying to make sure that the house is secure at this point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And found 42-year-old Kimberly Cates deceased in the bedroom.
Oh my gosh. That poor girl, anytime a child has to witness their parent dying, and especially in a manner like that, oh my gosh.
Oh, and it unfortunately gets worse. Oh. So not long after this, Officer Eric Wells, mm-hmm. arrives at the scene. He tends to Jamie right away.
Yeah.
Starts asking her, like, are you okay? What happened?
Right.
Jamie is coherent enough at this point. She starts telling them exactly what happened.
Good.
She tells them that there were guys in the house. One of them had a knife and the other one had what looked like a baseball bat.
Oh my gosh.
And they had hit her mom.
What the fuck?
Oh, I'm telling you, girl, it gets wild. David was notified about his wife's murder within hours of this happening, and was also told about Jamie's horrific injuries.
Oh my gosh.
Which, trigger warning, I'm about to tell you these injuries, and I'm telling you these injuries because I feel like we need to know what this poor child and her mother went through.
I think we may just have a blanket trigger warning for the foreseeable future.
I have another spot, I'll tell you, but...
Well, I think we can just put a precursor on the whole episode.
Yeah, it's a trigger.
Yeah, you may just want to skip this one if it's a lot for you.
Okay, so Jamie's head, arms, and torso had over 18 lacerations.
Oh my gosh. Were they from a knife or from the bat?
From a knife.
Oh my gosh.
The blows were so hard, they caused a broken jaw, a cracked skull, a punctured lung, and a portion of her foot to be missing. Her big toe was almost completely severed.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And mind you, this is a 11-year-old.
Right. They thought that girl had died, I guarantee you.
They did. Yes.
Oh my gosh.
You are correct.
Oh, that poor baby.
But the thing for the officers that gave them a little comfort was not only did she survive, but she was lucid enough to actually recount the entire thing once she was done with
incredible.
Surgery.
Incredible. She had to just have been, like, pure adrenaline at that point.
This girl has one of the most amazing heads on her shoulder, and I'll explain it a little later on in the episode as to why.
Yeah.
So she recounted that she had woken up in the early hours of the morning to her mother sitting up in bed and asking her, quote, Jamie, is that you?
Yeah.
Before her mother started screaming.
And she was in the bed that night as well, right?
Yep. Okay. Right next to her mom. Literally, her mom says, Jamie, is that you? Her mother begins screaming.
Oh my gosh.
I have chills just talking about this.
Yeah, it's like making my heart break and like shivers down my spine at the same time.
So her mother, to Jamie, looked like she had been struck by a baseball bat multiple times at this point. To which then she sees another man and he begins to attack Jamie.
Oh my gosh.
With a knife.
What the fuck?
And her mother fought so hard, she literally jumped in front of Jamie to try to shield her at this point. To which then Jamie jumped off the bed, but was quickly snatched by the guy who had stabbed her and thrown into a glass door.
Fuck you, man. It's a fucking child. You go into someone's home when their defenses are already down anyway, and then you have to fucking brutalize a mom and her child like that. Fuck you.
Oh, and you're gonna...
See, I'm already mad.
You're gonna get pissed even more.
I know.
So when Jamie hit the door and collapsed, she realized that they weren't coming over to check on her.
Right.
So she played dead. This is why she's brilliant.
Girl. Yes.
She played dead.
Yeah.
Which, I'm sorry, that sucks that she even had to learn how to play dead as an 11-year-old.
Well, and like for her to know that she had to make the decision between either playing dead or going to try to help her mother, she did what she needed to do.
Mm-hmm.
So she, because I guarantee you, something in her brain knew that this was the only way that her mom was going to get justice.
Yep.
Oh, what an amazing girl. Oh my
She's
gosh.
She's phenomenal. So she laid there and waited until she heard the men say, quickly grab the jewelry. It gets weirder.
I'm going to save it. I will rant later.
Save it.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So when she was sure that they left the house, she staggered to the kitchen and called 911. This girl is a freaking hero, in my opinion. Like, blew this out of the water.
Seeing that it makes sense why they didn't get anything on the call, because she couldn't talk.
She couldn't talk.
Oh my gosh.
I'm going to say trigger again, because I'm going to talk about Kimberly and her, her issues. She had been struck in the head and torso 36 times.
What the fuck?
Oh, I'm not even done. With an object that they believed to be a machete.
What the fuck?
And it was. Yeah. It looked like a baseball bat to her because of the size right. of a machete and the way he was swinging it.
Oh my gosh.
It was a machete. The blows were so hard that it broke her skull and sunk into her brain. And the most heartbreaking part of this is that the coroner admitted that she was alive for every single strike.
Oh my gosh.
So she knew exactly what was going on.
Oh my gosh.
So that's as graphic as I'm going to get. All of Jamie's accounts made this seem like it was a robbery gone wrong, but the detectives were like,
this is so fucking personal.
Yeah. Well, and it's actually, the weird part is it's not, and I'll get into it in a minute, but they were like, something still doesn't fit. Like,
right.
they literally only, like, the attack happened early in the morning, while they're in bed asleep, only a handful of jewelry was taken.
Right.
It just didn't fit. It's
almost like the robbery was a cover.
Yeah.
Or just, like, a bonus for them.
Yes.
Because they're fucking pieces of shit.
Yeah. Oh, and you're gonna love this one. Further investigation showed that the intruders actually had 2 points of entry into the house. The basement window had been broken, and a chest had been placed under the window, possibly indicating that this was how they got in and out of the house.
Oh my gosh.
The police also noticed that the AC unit had been taken out of the porch window, indicating that it was the second point of entry for these intruders. Like, I'm sorry, they're literally living in a hot-ass state, and they have an air conditioner in their window, and you feel like you have the audacity
right.
to remove that to then right. intrude into their home and kill them?
Right. Like,
okay.
do something else with your fucking life,
mm-hmm.
and don't be such a giant piece of shit.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh.
So police further noticed that at one point, the power of the house had been shut off.
Oh my gosh.
The circuit breaker in the hallway had blood smears all over it, showing that it most likely had been tampered with after the attack.
Oh my gosh.
So the police thought that the breaker had been turned off before the attack, and then turned back on after, as the house lights were on when they arrived on scene.
And I hate thinking things like this, but, like, thank goodness it happened in the time that it did, because she wouldn't have, I mean, if they hadn't turned the power back on, she wouldn't have been able to fucking call
Mm-mm.
the cops.
No.
Like, if they had cut wires,
yeah.
she wouldn't have been able to call 911 at yeah. all.
So, not long after the murder and the attack on Kim and Jamie happened, police immediately start getting tips. And I'm telling you what, this is Good. One of the fastest cases I've ever seen in my life.
Small town, girl.
I'm telling you. So, one being from 22-year-old Jamie Hulins,
mm-hmm.
he had been had friends at his house in the nearby town of Brookline, where two acquaintances had been talking about how they killed a woman and a child in a house in Mount Vernon, while two other friends watched. It gets wild. And I don't even have the full details because I didn't want to get into it, but several other teens came forward, like, stating that this pair had, like, been parading around knives, and they had claimed that they had been on a murderous rampage. There was some other stuff about, like, girlfriends of people that are involved in this literally would call them up and be like, you're fucking stupid, turn yourself in, this is ridiculous.
Like, and let alone that you're a fucking terrible human.
Yes, yes.
Oh my god, so, I'm so, like, I'm squinting, like, my eyes are burning. I'm so mad right now.
So, these awful teens, because that doesn't even, like, give you the pretext of them, were 17-year-old Steven Spader, 19-year-old Christopher Gribble,
who fucking cares?
The two The two friends that watched the attack were 18-year-old Billy Marks, 17-year-old Quinn Glover.
So,
teenagers.
How in the fuck is there not, let alone just one depraved teenager like that, but you have three friends who are also just as fucking disgusting.
Oh, and it gets weirder.
You have two that are sitting there just fucking watching it. Oh my god. Yeah. Oh, I'm so mad right now.
I know. So, mind you, the attacks happened on the 4th, right? October 5th, police pull up to the family home of Steven Spader.
Mm-hmm.
And they run right into Spader and Gribble walking out of the house as if they're just going on their happy little way. They bring them in to interview because they tell them that they're not being arrested because they technically don't have anything to arrest them.
They're just hoping that they can get
right
information.
So when they said interview, they mm-hmm. both agreed.
They're like, yeah, just, we'll talk about it. Because they're fucking narcissistic little fuckwads.
Oh, it gets even wilder. But at this time, Marks and Glover are already at the station.
Damn.
This is how fast this police work
That's amazing.
I was shook. Like, well, I had chills.
Thank goodness they're fucking idiots.
Yeah. Well, that too. And thank goodness that there's other people who actually came forward and had something to
that
say.
That care. That at least there are people that socialize with them that aren't also equally disgusting fucking garbage humans.
Well, and they got the names of them because there was a young teenager by the name of Kyle. His mother came forward and said, like, my son has information. FYI.
He's probably fucking terrified. And he's probably like, Mom, these kids are telling us these stories. And even then, if I was a teenager, I can't say that I would necessarily think they were being serious. I'd be hard to be like, okay, is this actually true? Mm-hmm. And you just have to hope and pray that the kids that are hearing this are actually going to take it with some grain of seriousness.
Yeah. So, Christopher Gribble, let me tell you what. This boy is...
Sounds like fucking gerbil.
Something else, right? He was interviewed for more than 7 hours.
Damn.
And at the time that he was detained, he was wearing a camo gear outfit. And he had 4 pocket knives on him. Why? I have no idea.
Because he's fucking disgusting.
Oh, he's worse. So, Gribble was, like, explained as very upbeat and talkative. And he gave police a very long-winded detail about his strategic brilliance at Dungeons and Dragons.
I can't.
He was quoted as saying, I have an incredible ability for strategical and tactical thinking.
You can fuck off.
This kid, I kid you not, his brain literally tells him that he is smarter than everybody else in the world. And I will get into it even more.
He's a narcissistic sociopath. Yes. That's how so many of them are.
But here's where it gets weird. Well, not weird. Just stupid. He told police that he found out about the attacks that day and found the whole thing disturbing.
Mm, did you? You did it, you stupid fuck.
Mm-hmm. So, Spader and Gribbles, which are the two that committed this crime, and they're going to tell you they didn't, but I digress.
Of course they are.
Right? They said they had been driving around the area until the early morning hours and stopped at a dirt pull-off by a tractor to go to the bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
When asked about the murders, Gribble said, and I am literally giving you word-for-word quote of what this child's audacity was. He said, assuming that somebody specifically tried to kill them, like, that rubs against my conscience. Personally, I'm the type of gentlemanly chivalry sort of guys that you don't even hit on girls, let alone go out and treat them badly. And if the girl's in the hospital, obviously she's probably got injured or something. End quote. Yeah, when I listened to that interview, I literally was like, twitching.
Those cops probably wanted so badly to just wring his fucking
neck. Oh, they did.
Because they knew. Yeah. They knew he did it.
Yeah.
Oh, what a fucker.
Following this, the officers notify him that not only Jamie was going to live, but she was going to be able to identify the two men who did
this. Probably shit himself.
Gribbles had the audacity, and I literally wrote this like this. He had the audacity to say, oh yeah, that's good. Yeah.
Yep, an 11-year-old girl's gonna help you fry, motherfucker.
Yep. So while these interviews are going on, the police are searching his car. They come up and find some absolutely horrifying objects.
Oh my gosh.
They include a knife, rope, hatchet, garbage bags, a shovel, and a receipt for $200 worth of jewelry from a pawn shop. Made out to Gribble. Yeah. Oh, and by the way, when confronted with this receipt, he said that him and his friends visited a yard sale on Saturday and purchased $20 worth of jewelry and then sold it at a pawn shop for $200.
Bull fucking shit. You're actually going to think that cops are dumb enough to believe, like, oh, what a quinky-dink, you have all these weapons in here. There was jewelry stolen from this crime scene.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So they had a machete and a hatchet? Like, they used a machete and they also had a hatchet?
In the car,
What the actual fuck? Don't give teenagers fucking weapons like this. I don't care who you are. Even if it's a teenager that seems like they are sound, teach them responsible way. Like, in what case would you need a fucking hatchet, for one? I know you're in the boonies, cutting some wood, whatever. But you don't need that just on your person.
Mm-mm.
That is a utility tool that you use for purposes on, you know, wood.
Mm-hmm.
cutting wood, something like that.
Yeah.
Don't give your fucking teenagers weapons with which they can kill someone and not teach them how to responsibly handle them.
Yep. So this is where, like, your comment about the police come in, because at this point, they have had enough. Like,
yeah.
They are done. They are starting to turn up the heat because they're like, I'm done with this. Right. I'm tired of listening to this.
That would be so fucking maddening to not have enough to arrest them at that point and have to just listen to this bullshit. To him bullshit. Talk like this,
yeah. So they tell Gribbles that his friends are in the other room telling different stories.
Mm-hmm.
And mind you, they are.
Yeah.
Even though he knows this, he continues to deny any involvement.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
Of course. And then he even claims that the officers are trying to manipulate him.
He's a dungeon master, of course.
Right, of course.
Fucking dumb dick.
But they keep coming at him with this evidence that they've got. They keep getting more and more as they're interviewing him.
Hey, you dumb fuck.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And he starts to change his tactic. And he starts to talk. But as we know, with so many murders and serial killers, he doesn't shut up.
Right, exactly.
At this point.
Because he thinks that he's just weaving this tale that they will always believe.
Exactly. So, the thing that really kind of threw police with him is that he's not a stereotypical murderer.
Right.
He was a devout Mormon. He lived in a sheltered life, didn't even have a parking ticket on his record.
Mm-hmm.
And he told most people that his greatest accomplishment was earning the rank of Eagle Scout. Like,
he's just one of those people that had it in his brain, and he was going to act on that.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So growing up with his parents, a lot of people said, and his parents also said this, that, like, they tried to teach him right from wrong, which most parents do.
Mm-hmm.
But he had some weird idiosyncrasies?
Idiosyncrasies.
Thank you.
Yeah.
He was not good with peers.
Mm-hmm.
He was very awkward. He laughed at the wrong things. He did not pick up on social cues.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't talk much, but when he did, he would ramble for hours.
Right.
And his father even described him in court as intelligible and eloquent, but had trouble understanding when people wanted him to stop talking.
It sounds like he had undiagnosed autism or Asperger's.
Something to that extent.
Something like that.
He also believed that whatever his viewpoint was always the right one.
Yeah.
There's a lot of signs here.
Mm-hmm.
So, remember Billy Marks and Quinn Glover?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. The two that
just fucking watched it.
Yeah, the two that just watched it. Yeah. They both immediately told police everything that happened.
Like, well, good.
Vomited.
Yeah, everything. At least you fucking grew a conscience at some point.
Mm-hmm.
Fuckers.
And then there's one more critical person that I haven't talked about in this case. Mm-hmm. And his name is Autumn Savory. S-A-V-O-Y.
Savoy.
Thank you. Autumn Savoy. I'll get it out yet. Savoy originally told police, like, he came forward to police.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, at least props for that.
Right.
Came forward and told police that Spader and Gribble couldn't possibly have committed the murder because they showed up at his house at 2 a.m. on Saturday morning, they smoked some pot, and they went to sleep. But we're not done. Police did not believe that.
Right.
And he actually proceeded to fall apart under police pressure. And here's the thing. He admitted that very late on the night of Saturday, October 3rd, Spader and Gribble had left his house. Their parting words were that they were going to go kill someone. At first, Savoy thought they were joking, which, again, we've talked about this.
Yeah.
Later, he texted Spader and asked if he was doing a job, meaning, were they committing the burglary? He knew about the burglary. He knew that was happening. So he was asking them if that's what they were doing.
Right.
Around 1:30, Spader responded with, "Busy, will hit you when I can."
Had they, like, committed burglaries before that anyone knew of?
Yeah, I think I have it in here.
Because I'm like, that just based on him asking it in that manner, it seems like they've fucking done this before.
Yeah. So, Gribble and Spader then arrived at Savoy's home at 5:30 a.m. That's, like, not even an hour after this.
Right. So, they literally just went in and immediately started rampaging.
Yeah. And they woke him up to get in. They told him that they broke into a house without a security system and had murdered two people. They then showed Savoy the machete.
Mm-hmm.
He saw blood on it, and as well as on the fillet knife that Gribble had, that he used on Jamie.
Oh my gosh.
Savoy noticed that they were wearing different clothing. And then Gribble and Spader said that they still had the clothes they'd been wearing during the attack and placed them in a black trash bag. Next, they asked if they could burn the bag at Savoy's home. He declined, but instead talked them into throwing the bag into the river.
Oh my gosh.
The trio drove to the river, where Savoy took the bag, which held the clothing, knives, and a few other items, threw it in the river, and then next they went to a convenience store at 7 a.m. and got a snack.
The amount of culpability in various humans, I just can't even process it. How so many fucking people let this happen mm-hmm. and egged it on mm-hmm. and helped.
Mm-hmm.
It makes me fucking sick.
Mm-hmm. So, when Savoy, like, breaks under police, you know, pressure.
Yeah.
He led them to the location where he threw the bag in the river.
Mm-hmm.
They actually found the bag caught up on a tree.
I was going to say.
Down the river.
Hopefully there's something in that river there that caught it.
That's why I left this in. Oh, because my gosh. Key evidence. The police seized 2 jewelry boxes, sneakers, a wallet containing the name David Cates from the river.
He had his wallet with him?
They had his wallet, yeah. I'm assuming he probably had multiple wallets because he traveled so much.
Yeah, maybe he only needed like a government ID or something. Okay.
The bag also contained clothing items, and on the tags of the clothing were the names Stephen Spader and Christopher Gribble.
They have
their fucking names on the tags. I'm okay with it. But
yeah,
so.
I am too. Like, thank goodness you're that fucking stupid. Oh my gosh.
So here's where this comes in of, like, prior activities. A week mm-hmm. before the home invasion, they actually burglarized a home near Spade's house.
Okay.
And they said once they ran out of money from the items that they had stolen in that burglary, they decided they wanted to do it again.
Get a fucking job.
Mm-hmm. So Spader and Marks then began scouting out homes in Mount Vernon because it was remote and away from prying eyes. Spader and Gribble then made an agreement between themselves, which they then made Marks and Glover agree to. They agreed that if they ever burglarized a home and found people inside, they would kill them, and quote, for fun.
What the actual fuck?
So if that doesn't tell you guys, they literally did this for fun. When police asked them why they did this, that was their answer.
I knew it. I knew we were going to get to this point that it was literally going to be for no fucking reason.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That it was either they went into the house, there was people in there that they didn't expect, so they just killed them, or they were going to do something and just did it for the sport.
Mm-hmm.
Fucking disgusting.
Yep.
Oh my gosh.
So police had gotten the rest of the story out of Gribble, but they still had one more person to interview. That person is Spader.
Mm-hmm.
When they went to interview Spader, he threw Gribble, again, his childhood best friend, mind you, under the bus.
You still, I mean, yeah, if he was, because I guarantee you that little fucker was the mastermind behind it, but still, you participated just as much. You were just as culpable in mm-hmm. this.
He told police that he had not committed the crimes they were accusing him of.
Like, I was just there. I was just holding things.
That he didn't know who did it, but that they deserved the death penalty.
Hope you think that, you know, hope you're just coming to terms with that for mm-hmm. yourself. And that you feel that fucking guilty.
Yeah. He did say, though, that he was with Gribble when they pawned off the jewelry, but he didn't know where the jewelry had come from.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Then he asked for a lawyer and refused to talk to police after that.
Yeah, because he probably thought, I'm fucked.
Yeah. And it gets even worse. So, as the investigation continues, the police discover that Spader had actually formed a club. He called it the Disciples of Destruction. The D.O.D.
I thought you were going to say the disappointment, like something like that. I was like, yes, you are fucking disappointment.
No, see, the Disciples of Destruction. The D.O.D. had a logo designed by Spader.
Of course they did. Of course.
And he recruited Gribble, Marks, and Glover for his club, and he decided that the home invasion and the murder act would be a way of initiation into the club if they had the guts to follow through.
He was the one.
He's the mastermind behind this.
What a
But Gribble fucker. Is like a mastermind in a different way. Yeah. Like it's like he's the mastermind on the murder side.
Yeah, it's like he's the puppeteer almost.
Yeah.
And then the other fucker's like, this is my idea. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And he's probably just trying to be bad and didn't think that anyone would actually go through with it.
Probably. So, Spader and Gribble were charged with first-degree murder, attempted murder, conspiracy to commit murder, as well as other lesser charges.
Yeah.
Which they deserve.
Yeah, all of them.
Marks and Glover were charged with burglary, conspiracy to burglary, and robbery. Because they actually did not commit any murder or acts of attack.
Also been accessory after the fact.
I would agree.
Accessory to murder.
Yep.
Yeah.
They were also warned that prosecutors would be seeking additional indictments when they presented their case to the grand jury.
Mm-hmm.
Remember Autumn Savoy?
Yeah.
He was also charged with two counts of hindering apprehension and prosecution, and one count of conspiracy to commit apprehension or prosecution in early November 2009.
I'm so glad that they did this because so many cases I get very mad when there's so much involvement from other people and they don't press charges because they cooperated.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand to an extent, and I think if this case hadn't moved as quickly as it had, it would have been a different story.
I would agree.
Yeah.
100%. So, fearful of their potential charges and other prosecutions of what prosecutors would seek an indictment for in front of the grand jury,
mm-hmm.
Savoy, Glover, and Marks all agreed to testify against Gribble and Spader in trial.
Good.
Which they Good. Should.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, they get a little bit lesser of a sentence,
They're saying something, and they're still ensuring that the actual murderers, like, they are, like I said, just as guilty, but not of the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, at least they're getting some charges against them.
Agreed. So, the trial for Steven Spader actually begins August of 2010. Like...
And it happened in
October 2009?
Of 29. Damn.
Like, this was fast.
Yeah, that was.
Like, I'm saying, fast. I've never seen one go this fast
from arrest to trial. I was thinking 2004 first, because that's when they first moved there. Yes, but correct. That's insane.
Yeah. Fastest I think I've ever seen.
Good.
He pleads not guilty, of course.
Of course he does.
The defense presents a forensic scientist who stated that nothing tied Spader forensically to the scene of the crime. However, the circumstantial evidence against him was very, very strong.
Yeah.
Marks, Glover, and Savoy all attested to their earlier statements and gave details of the savagery with which Spader attacked Kimberly and Jamie.
Yeah, that's literally putting it lightly, even.
Right? They also spoke about the plan to use the home invasion as an initiation into the DOD club. And then Kyle Fenton, who is the one who actually, like, told on all of these people that I talked about at the beginning, mm-hmm. he also testified and gave details about the visit that Spader and Gribble had paid to him, because they actually came to his home and told him about this, and that's why he told his mom, and then he turned them
Thank
in.
Thank goodness for that child.
Amazing human.
Yes.
So he said everything that they told him, which, Good. Like, hell yeah.
Yeah, absolutely, because he at least has a fucking moral compass.
Right? And he's not going to get an accessory because he literally went the second
he
found out.
Yeah, he did exactly what he was supposed to. Yeah. And even then, even if he hadn't told them, I don't think he still would have, because they just told him and it would have been reasonable for him not to believe them.
Right. I mean, it's a teenager who comes to you and says, I killed these people.
Right. And it's like we talk about your brain protecting itself too. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
You know?
So mad props to Kyle. I give him mad props.
Thank goodness for that child.
So the defense did their best to raise questions as to who had actually committed the murder, because they both were attacking.
Yeah, I'm like, it seems like both of them, but...
Yeah. There was no DNA evidence trying him or tying him to the murder.
Right.
They suggested that any of the others who testified against Spader may have been using him as a scapegoat.
Okay.
Spader did his case no favors.
Of course not.
He openly threatened the witnesses while they were on the stand.
He did. Wow.
In full hearing of the jury, like, right in front of them.
Yeah, doesn't fucking care.
No. However, the most damning evidence was the testimony of Chad Landry, which was Spader's friend in prison. So.
There's always a fucking prison friend, because immediately dumb dudes are trying to assert their badassery in their minds. I'm not saying that they are. And trying to brag about shit that they've fucking done. Mm-hmm. And they're so fucking dense in the head that they're just like, I can say this and they're not going to say anything. Are you fucking kidding me? Any prisoner is going to rat on you so fucking fast, especially if there is potentially a benefit for them.
Oh, and get this.
Get the fuck out of here.
Get this. So Landry told the jury that Spader would pass notes in books that they would slide along the corridor between the cells.
Mm-hmm.
Landry would pretend to flush the notes down the toilet and make Spader happy, but he actually kept them. He figured that if he used the notes as leverage
mm-hmm.
and then gave them to authorities, he would receive a reduced sentence, which we already talked about. Like, this is what happens.
Yeah, that's the game. And I can't say I blame them.
No, I don't either.
Use what you have.
Right? So the notes written by Spader in his handwriting stated that he had, quote, whacked the mother 36 times and that it was an adrenaline rush to him.
I'm going to assume, I don't know, because they're really stupid. Did they wear gloves? Because I'm just thinking, why did they do, like, fingerprints? Because if both of their fingerprints were on all of the weapons, then...
I'm not really sure. As far as I read, I didn't see that they had gloves on, okay. But I don't really know.
Yeah.
In one of his notes, he wrote that he was the most, quote, sick and twisted person you will ever meet, end quote.
So yeah, he just gets pleasure out of that and wants it to be a persona.
Well, and found torture enjoyable.
Of course. You're just a fucking disgusting little fuckwit.
Yeah, and then in another note, he explained the concept and then initiation into the DOD club. He literally threw himself under the bus with these notes, which I think is hilarious. Right.
Because he just literally wanted it to be like, look at this club I made. It's so gross.
Yeah,
it's like,
disgusting.
Really? I can't fucking stand it.
Mm-hmm.
And I just hate it because it's like the equivalent of stupid high schoolers making a club because they think it's cool. Mm-hmm. But they literally murder people within it. But I just, you're so fucking dumb. I just can't stand them.
Here's the kicker. The jury deliberated for 90 minutes.
Yeah.
That was it.
Yeah.
I love it.
I honestly feel like that's even a little long. But, you know, they have to go through semantics first. Yeah. So probably an hour of that was semantics.
Semantics, yeah. So Steven Spader was convicted on all counts.
Good.
On his 19th birthday.
Yeah, you little fuck.
He was sentenced to mandatory life sentence without the possibility of parole
mm-hmm.
On a first-degree murder charge, and then the court imposed a maximum sentencing on the remaining charges, totaling 76 years.
Yeah, it seems light for the additional ones, but yeah, life.
Right.
You got it.
Christopher Fucker. Gribble pleaded, not guilty of by course. Reason of insanity. During the course of his trial.
See, I had a feeling because and I'm saying this as a neurodivergent person. He is clearly neurodivergent in some way, and I had a feeling he was going to try to ride that mm-hmm, to insanity.
Mm-hmm. So under New Hampshire law, he forfeited his criminal trial.
Mm-hmm.
This meant that his lawyers actually had to prove to the jury that his actions were a result of a mental disease or defect.
Yeah, because that was my question, because I understand the forfeiting of the trial, but don't they have to determine insanity before they can forfeit the trial?
No, they can forfeit the trial first, but if they do, they have to prove it, or else he gets everything that they're sentencing him with.
Okay, so I see. So it's a little bit different than out here then.
Yeah.
So it's, they don't have to prove it beforehand, but it's kind of like,
do
the
or die.
Alfred police or
yeah.
more or less the same, like, I didn't do it only because I was insane, but, like, I did it.
Right.
Okay, I see.
So the question was not whether or not he participated in the crimes. His prior confession had already shown that he had.
Right.
The question rather was whether or not he had done it in his right mind.
Right, so if he was in his right mind at the time of the crime.
Yes.
So that's a big gamble.
It is a big gamble.
That's a big gamble.
So, Gribble's attorney actually argued that he suffered from antisocial personality disorder.
That doesn't make you insane.
Which roughly half of the witnesses agreed was an accurate statement in regards to his personality.
But it can just be a result of being autistic, on the spectrum, having Asperger's, and that does not make you insane.
No.
Bruh.
A few witnesses also recalled that Gribble's had seemed socially awkward. He was nice enough, but he was prone to missing social cues. That's a huge
Again,
one.
This is, like, literally exactly what I just said. And that's fucked up. That is fucked up for people that
actually have it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like, they're not insane.
No.
They're in their completely right minds. They just function a little bit differently than quote-unquote neurotypical people, which I feel like are the minority in my personal opinion. But, I digress.
A friend of Gribble's further testified that he was an intelligent person, he was well-spoken, but he had a warped world view wherein he was always in the right, and he saw himself as a, quote, destroying angel. That doesn't tell you anything.
Woof. That can also just be a narcissist.
Right. Gribble's also did himself no favors.
Of course not, because he wasn't going to go down without making himself on this pedestal.
Nope. So he decided to testify on his own behalf.
Of course he did. Oh my god. He's like Letitia Stout.
Yeah, this is where it gets kind of weird. He stated that he had been fantasizing about murdering his mother and torturing her from the age of 14 on as a result of her abusing him. Now, I listened to what he said about these abusive things that she did to him.
Did she actually?
He said that she made him force himself on the ground on his stomach, and she would sit on his arms and legs and pop zits on his back and pull infected hairs out of his scalp, which I was like, that's a really detailed, odd thing to say, right. But I don't like, classify that as abuse.
Weird.
And also, his mother did testify on the stand that she had spanked him because he claimed that she had spanked him.
I mean, a lot of parents do.
Well, and she said that one time she spanked him so hard she broke a spoon and she felt horrendous. And she actually had that spoon in her armoire to remind her to not do that ever again.
Okay, so she learned from it.
She learned from it.
Yeah.
So, but these allegations of abuse were never corroborated.
Naked,
corroborated.
Substantiated.
Whatever we want to say. Never proven.
Right.
And again, not an excuse to murder people.
No, not at all. Yeah, we were just talking about this last week. Like, that does not give you the right, like, a shitty upbringing, even if he did, which it sounds like he had pretty normal upbringing, but we weren't there, so not trying to cast stones, but even then, doesn't give you the right to fucking murder someone. That does not, nope. You're not God. You can't play God.
Nope. The prosecution had experts interview Gribble for many hours. These experts testified that Gribble was, in fact, sane.
Yeah.
And that he knew the difference between right and wrong.
Right. And even then, anyone, you know, pro tip, if you're trying to sit here and claim insanity, if you are just as cognizant of what you did after the fact, you were sane.
That's what that's actually what I'm getting into. No, you're good. Prosecutors actually pointed out that Gribble had been sane enough before and after the home invasion to go as far as to plan and plot the crime, and then to try to cover it up by hiding evidence.
Right. Insanity only works if it's like a spur-of-the-moment thing, and you snap. Or if you're like, if you disassociate from time to time.
And you're continually disassociating.
Right. This isn't my completely non-professional
opinion.
It's just my very, I have absorbed so much true crime. And it's just, that seems to always be the case. You know, they snap or they disassociate frequently.
And people who are insane are literally always insane. Like, right. Constantly, like, having, like,
unless they have multiple personalities.
True. But even then, they're still
It's still always there. Just go through the phases. Yeah. I get what you're saying.
So all the gloating and everything that he was doing, even though he could never, like, explain beyond, like, the brash teenage ego. Like, pretty much everything explained, like, what was going on and what he did.
Yeah, absolutely. He planned that shit.
Yeah. Jury deliberated for 2 hours.
Okay.
Which, you know, the first hour was probably
exactly. And it's only because the insanity thing was in there, I guarantee you.
They rejected Gribble's plea of insanity.
Thank goodness.
They declared him guilty of first-degree murder, attempted murder, conspiracy to commit murder, conspiracy to commit burglary, and witness tampering.
Love it.
He was sentenced to life without the possibility of parole, plus 50 years to life, as well as an additional 52 years for other charges.
Fuck you, dude.
Yep.
Fuck you.
Billy Marks.
Oh, yeah.
Pleaded guilty to conspiracy. I know. He pled guilty to conspiracy.
Okay.
To commit murder and burglary.
Thank goodness he pled guilty.
And
it was probably part of a deal.
But. Well, and he's not even done yet. And he pled guilty to being an accomplice to first degree assault in exchange for a reduced sentence.
Okay.
But he still was sentenced with 30 to 60 years in prison.
Thank goodness.
Quinn Glover
mm-hmm.
also pleaded guilty.
Good.
To robbery, burglary, and conspiracy to commit burglary in exchange for a reduced sentence. He was sentenced to 20 to 40 years.
And, like, still have problems that he wasn't accessory to murder, because he was.
Yeah.
He was present. He let it happen.
Agreed. Autumn Savoy pled guilty to conspiracy and hindering apprehension and prosecution in exchange for a reduced sentence.
Okay.
He was sentenced to 5 to 12 years in prison, and he paroled in 2015.
I thought that's pretty fair for him.
It makes sense.
Yeah.
In 2012, the Supreme Court ruled that the sentencing of minors to life sentences would be granted resentencing hearings for reduced sentences.
Okay? Resentencing hearings.
Sorry, resentencing. Okay. Thank you. In 2013, Spader informed his attorneys that he did not want a hearing.
Okay.
One would be held in any case, but he did not appear.
Okay.
And his life and 76-year sentence was upheld.
Okay, good.
He also, I didn't write this down, but I read it. He also wrote an apology to Jamie and David.
Okay.
And basically said, like, he deserved to stay in prison for the rest of his life.
It's...
To which Jamie actually responded and said that they do not accept it. Because...
Good for you, girl. Good for you, girl.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah, exactly.
They can't bring her mother back.
Right. It doesn't matter. And it seems like once he was taken out of the element mm-hmm. to be on his little narcissistic pedestal
mm-hmm.
and his ego wasn't constantly being stroked, mm-hmm. that he's like, I fucked up and I'm glad, because that's exactly what needs to fucking happen. Doesn't help anything. No. Doesn't make it that you need to have a lesser sentence. But I'm very glad that you came to that conclusion that you fucked up and you are a terrible person.
Yep. October of 2014, Gribble actually sought a reduced in his sentence.
Of course he fucking did. This little shitbag, I can't stand.
Based on the Supreme Court ruling, his sentence was also upheld.
Thank goodness. Because I'm like, they were 17 at the time, and in a lot of states, that's an adult. It doesn't mm-hmm. fucking matter. And they were over 18 when they were sentenced. So fuck you very much.
Mm-hmm. So I'm going to end on a little bit of a high note. I'm going to talk a little bit about Jamie real quick.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't want to dig too much into her personal life. I don't really think we need to talk about it. Yeah. But in autumn of 2009, obviously this horrendous attack mm-hmm. happened to this community.
Right.
Jamie continues to thrive. As a survivor.
Of course she does. I love it so much.
Her and her father honor her mother's memory every year with a gold tournament. It's a golf tournament mm-hmm. For her mother for the Memorial Scholarship Fund they set up for it.
I love that.
As of 2010, I couldn't find any more recent numbers, but as of 2010, her memorial fund has given more than $250,000 in scholarships to students who continue her legacy of helping others.
I love that.
I do
is too. It a fund that actively takes donations?
It
or?
Is.
Okay.
And like I have the website. Yeah. It's also, it's the very first source in our sources. Right. You can go, I have like tears in my eyes talking about this.
Yeah.
You can go on it. You can donate. Jamie actually went on to attend the University of North Carolina, Wilmington, where mm-hmm. she studied public health.
I love that.
And she played field hockey.
Oh, hell yeah.
And in 2010, she was quoted as saying, just living every day like it's the last.
I love that. Did it say if she suffered any long-term effects? Or did she
I didn't see anything. I'm going to assume she made a full recovery because
she was...
Yeah,
or at least very close to it to be able to play field hockey. That's
a rough
sport. Yeah,
she's playing field hockey, and also she went on to be at every single one of their trials. So
I love it.
I'm going to say that she definitely thrived.
Full-on miracle, and mm-hmm. thank goodness for that too, because my gosh, her poor father, I can even imagine the guilt he would have felt. I guarantee you he does anyway, but like, if he had lost both his wife and his daughter, and I guarantee you they have helped each other through everything.
Facts.
Oh, she's so amazing. What a miracle she is. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, so that's the story of Kimberly Cates.
You know, nothing infuriates me more than fucking people who can't be productive members of society and go to burglarize a home and subsequently kill someone as well. Like, it's bad enough that you're just a fucking piece of shit that you're taking hard-earned property from other people,
mm-hmm.
but then that you think that you have the right to fucking take their lives because you're a piece of shit and want to take their property. I just don't... I can't even wrap my head around it. How they people escalate from burglary to murder. Mm-hmm. And it's just so fucking disgusting. That they're just like, I did it because it seemed fun. Are you kidding me? Like, obviously something's wrong with you. Like,
yeah.
You're just tapping into these instincts that good people don't. But it just fucking infuriates me. And the fact that they had, like you said, the audacity.
Literally.
Of these bitches. And the fact that they had these other friends who fucking stood there.
They literally watched them do this. They were in the house watching them do it.
It's absolutely fucking disgusting.
Yeah.
And sorry for all the F-bombs. Anyone that's fucking offended by my language, I get pissed.
We are an explicit podcast, right. Okay?
And I'm sorry. I have feelings about people being fucking murdered. And curse words are just that. They're words. It helps me express my anger. So
absolutely.
Scroll and roll if you can't hang.
Yeah.
As I say that at the end of the episode. Well, thank you for bringing that, because telling Jamie's story and telling Kim's story was so vitally important in that. And I'm glad that most of the case was surrounded by their downfall. Because they're fucking stupid.
Yes.
And they decided to gloat about it. And I'm so glad that they did. Mm-hmm. Because they got fucking brought down.
Absolutely. And I'm just glad that Kim and Jamie, sorry, got justice so fast.
Yes.
Like this, I'm still
police work. I mean, I know a lot of it came down to people actually talking to, and thank goodness, but this was good police work.
I mean, I was very impressed.
Yes, absolutely. Truthfully.
And I wish we could solve more cases like this.
Right. Yeah, me too.
And it doesn't bring her back. It doesn't make the pain any less. No. But at least they were able to get justice.
And it wasn't in vain.
No.
Yeah. And I mean, also, like, to think about the parents of these fuckers, too. Because I guarantee you, no matter anything a parent does, they don't deserve to have a child turn into this and do what they did and have that weighing. Because I can only imagine, as a parent, I would feel responsibility for that.
I actually saw his parents and grandmother, Gribble's parents and grandmother, testify, and you can just tell their entire world's been just blown apart. It's like they're just
empty.
They don't even know what to do. They're just basically talking about, yes, our son is antisocial. Yes, he's this. Yes, he's like, they didn't try to make him out to be a good person. They didn't try to give excuses. They literally just... They literally just gave up. They were like, this sucks.
Yeah, because they also lost children, too. It's just terrible either way. All of it. It's just so senseless.
Yeah.
This was a completely senseless fucking crime.
Well, and what makes it even more senseless, and I didn't mention this in the thing, but I remember reading about it, is that they had originally cased the house next door.
Oh my gosh.
But when they got there, they decided to change last minute because they could not find the security system on this house.
Okay.
And they changed the house the last minute. Right. Like literally within minutes of getting to their destination.
Gives you the fucking right. Nothing.
Nothing.
Nothing gives you that fucking right. I'm, like, so angry. It's just, like, sitting behind my eyes right now.
I know.
Just, like, stewing in my brain.
I just wanted to bring it because I feel like I haven't heard that case. I haven't seen it on anything. Like I said, I saw very little. Some
parts of it sounds sort of familiar, but I've definitely not heard about the whole thing.
I just felt like we needed to bring it to the forefront.
Yeah, and there was a survivor in it, and she is thriving and such an incredible human. And she gets to go on and, you know, have babies, and I know it's gotta hurt to, if she wants to have babies, if she wants to get married, I know it's gotta hurt to know that her mom can't be there for that, but thank goodness she still has her dad, and she can just go on, and she's clearly living her life to its fullest. Yeah. She's living in spite of what happened to her, and not living in its shadow, which is so important.
The last article that I read from their last event that they had for the foundation, they said that she was seen laughing and smiling and taking pictures with her friends and people that she loved, which I think is great.
Yeah, that's amazing. Because it's like, you can't change what happened. No. All you can do is rise above it and just live your life. Like she said, live and like every day is your last. Because truly, it absolutely, like she is a perfect example that mm-hmm. any day could be your last.
Exactly.
Because there are pieces of absolute garbage in the world that think that they can play God.
Yes.
And take the life of someone for quote-unquote fun. Absolutely horrendous. But thank goodness justice was truly swift in this case.
Yes.
And I hope especially those little fuckers that were just there, I hope that eats away at them for the rest of their lives.
Well, I mean, think about it. If they actually decide to get married and have kids, like, how would you feel?
Right.
Knowing
right.
that somebody would do that to your wife and
right.
child.
Right. For all four of them, I hope they have the day they deserve. Every day.
Agree.
For the rest of their lives.
Agree.
And that's a real shit day.
Yeah.
Every fucking day.
Every day.
Oh. Well, thank you for... I mean, not thank you for having to tell that story, because it should have never happened in the first place, but I'm so glad that it turned out the way that it did, and mm-hmm. those fuckers came down, and Jamie's okay, and... I mean, as okay as she can be, you know, mm-hmm. those mental scars are never going to go away.
No.
But, yeah. And the fact that she's just living in her mom's legacy, truly, like she is living the way that her mom would have wanted her to.
Absolutely.
And I know their amazing relationship is what helped her to rise above
absolutely.
What happened.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Oy. Yeah.
Fuck all them. But we'll put the link to the foundation in the show notes.
Yep.
And the link to this YouTube video that Courtney showed me of this stupid gremlin person.
Oh, yeah. I'll have to send Gerbils. You that because I don't
he looks
have
like
it
a gerbil fitting.
I don't think I sent it.
Stupid little fucker.
I'll send it real quick.
Yeah, send it with your source
material.
I already
sent the sources, so okay. I'll send it.
Yeah. Just reply to the sources that you sent me if you can. If not, it's not a big deal.
Yeah.
Anyway, if you have cases that you would like us to cover, you would like to hear us talk about, you can send them to us. At inthenickofcrimepodcast@gmail.com. Email is preferred, but you can also send them to our Instagram or TikTok. All of our other links live in our link tree, which is in our show notes. And yeah, I think that's about all I can take today.
Yeah, so with that, keep it creepy and stay freaky.
And we will see you guys next Tuesday. Goodbye! I hated
ew.
That. Gross. We're so stupid and annoying.